This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
...6:06 in the evening, and before we dive into our story this hour, which admittedly is going to be a bit of a heavy one, have to be honest, we have some last few messages coming through on the issue of Mother's Day. So Janani Kumari says, very commercialised. It's like another Valentine's Day. Generally, mothers just want the presence, love and care of their children, nothing more. And then this from Chan.
Commercialization of Mother's Day can get quite annoying. I feel for people who's in a toxic relationship with their mothers. As much as we like to imagine everyone has the ideal relationship with their mothers, that is not the case. They're constantly reminded to appreciate their mothers when they can't be bothered. This can be a little bit annoying.
I can see how that would be the case, definitely. So moving on then, as we mentioned, it is the 50th anniversary of the May 13 riots, which was, as we remember, a hugely traumatic moment in our country's young history. In many ways, it also changed and shaped the direction of Malaysia.
For instance, the Rukunegara and the NEP were key policies introduced. And to this day, the conversations around unity and how to achieve a lasting sense of it continues. We've heard people talk about the role of schools, the media and families. So we're dedicating this hour to try to understand how this event shaped our national understanding of unity.
Yeah, it is a frequent conversation. I think it's one that school has attempted to drum into us, the idea that we must be united. May 13th also, I mean, when we were thinking about doing the show and having conversations around the station, it was not a simple conversation, right? It was a very, there were a lot of feelings that perhaps it was, it's still too painful a moment to revisit. On the other hand, there are people who say, look, you know, it's important that we face it and remember it. And I think that push and pull between wanting to remember and perhaps wanting to move past it is also something that we're going to address this hour.
And it's a difficult split, I guess, because, you know, we never really had very strong official accounts of what happened. But there's also, on the other hand, people who have experienced it who say one thing, but then official accounts that suggest other things.
Correct. So we wanted to hear from you as well. You know, when we've been talking about unity now for so many years, for as long as our country has been around, we're still talking about it today. What do you think of the state of unity in Malaysia? Do you think that we are a united nation? Call us at 7733-2900 to share your thoughts. You can also WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, we have on the line Dr. Ahmad Farouk Musa, founder and director of the Islamic Renaissance Front. Dr. Farouk, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
So as we mentioned, May 13th has constantly been brought up in the last 50 years when it comes to our conversations about race, about unity. It tends to serve as a precaution against something that should never happen again. In terms of how the event has shaped unity in our country, how do you see its significance?
I think the most important thing that this incident of May 13th is that it allows us to appreciate more of what is meant by peace and harmony. And I think that nobody likes to live in chaos and mayhem. And I believe it has shaped us to become more mature in appreciating this peace and harmony in our community.
50 years on, how do you think unity has evolved in Malaysia?
Well, I think it is an ongoing process. You know, like, you know, this, we have started a long time ago and we are still building this unity. And I think that not from the part of the government itself, but even from the civil societies. You've heard of this civil society called GBM, Gabungan Bertindak Malaysia. And, you know, like, it comprises of all these groups, the Malay groups, the Muslim groups, such as ICRAM, Muslim Professionals Forum, Islamic Renaissance Front, and also the Indian groups and the Chinese groups. And, you know, they're trying to build this kind of a cohesive society, civil societies among them, to build a better Malaysia. And I think that it is a good ongoing process that's going on.
So that is something that happens on the civil society level. But when it comes to political conversations that are had, very often, whenever the issue of race or unity is brought up, it gets very politically charged. Can we reclaim that space and perhaps have a more civil and constructive discussion about issues surrounding race and unity?
Yeah, I understand where you're heading to. Basically, you see, this particular issue about race, it is like certain political parties has been using it as an instrument, basically, for their political agenda. In order for them to be in power and to keep power to themselves. And I think, this we have seen in the previous regime, that was the main agenda being played. You know, like when they talk to the Malays, they would talk about the Malay rights and things like that. When they talk Chinese, they say, we are defending your rights as well. So they have this, fork tongue, talking different languages to different groups. And I think that has kind of perpetuated over the years. And even now we are in a new Malaysia, I think we have to rectify that and we have to move forward and try to reclaim that space to say that, we are all Malaysians, irrespective of whether we are Malays, we are Indians or we are Chinese, we are all Malaysians. And Malaysians, we should consider ourselves as Malaysians first than anything else.
And whose responsibility do you think it will be to take a leadership role in trying to reclaim that space? Because obviously there are many groups and many people who will take an active interest in this. Who should be leading the charge and, how can we get organised?
Yeah, it's a difficult question to answer, basically. I think that the government has been doing a good work on this as well. I think they set up the NUCC and, and more importantly, I think the civil society, I think for the past 10 years, you have this mushrooming of civil societies in our country that we have not seen before. And because of this group of civil societies, that people tend to become more aware of this situation and people tend to become more educated to understand, some speeches were meant to be politically charged. And some were really meant to be, it was really an honest appraisal of what is happening on the ground. And I think that's the who should be in charge? Well, I would say the government of the day must take the lead. But of course, the civil societies must work hand in hand with the government.
What principles, values, or even philosophies should define the policies that shape Malaysia's unity for the future?
Well, I think that the most important thing is tolerance, right? And if we are able to accept this, the differences between us and to understand that we have to build a better future, all of us, that's the most important thing. And of course, to embrace the spirit of multiculturalism, to be able to understand that. And the most important thing for democracy to work is that we're able to give space for the minorities, be them whether they are racial minorities, religious minorities, even among the Muslims, they are religious minorities among the Muslims, like the Shiites or the Ahmadis, they are religious minorities, or the sexual minorities. We have to give space to these people. And I think that, in order to build a cohesive society, everyone must be able to express themselves. And I think that if there is a spirit of tolerance in order for us to appreciate the views of the others, and I think we'll be able to build a just society.
And do you think that this is something that should be happening at the school level? Because that is a conversation that's been going on about how to introduce it at, at the youngest possible age, I guess.
Well, I might have a different idea about all this because, of course, theoretically, we have to foster it when the children are still young, and we have to basically try and come up with a policy where everyone would be able to embrace it, right? But the problem is that now we have this all different types of schools in this country. We have vernacular school, we have the religious school, we have this private school, we have the government schools, and I don't know how we're going ahead with this. We need a very strong Minister of Education to basically to think and to try and solve this issue. And I think that, you know, in order for us to be able to foster unity among our children, is basically to get them to understand some of the basic principles that they have to adhere to. For example, like the national language. And everybody must know the national language and be well-versed in national language. And I think that's one of the things. And the other thing is, of course, to appreciate the different cultures in this society and the different religious backgrounds of the people. And I think if you're able to explain or be able to educate our children about these values, I think there's a bright future for us.
And moving forward, how would you want May 13 to be remembered?
Well, I would say that, you know, it is a black dot in our history. And I want it to be remembered as something that we should not want it to happen ever again in our society. And to able to understand what had really caused this May 13. I think one of the main catalysts for that had caused these riots and mayhem at that time was basically about economic inequality. And I think this must be addressed by the government of today. How to attain equality among the people, among the different races. And I think that, you know, for the first few years, the Gini coefficient, for example, has not improved that much. And of course, we have managed to eradicate this what we call as absolute poverty. But there's also, when we talk about relative poverty, you know, we can still see that in our community. And I think it's a very important thing for the government of today to address.
Dr. Farooq, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. Ahmad Farooq Musa, founder and director of the Islamic Renaissance Front, giving his opinion on national unity, really, and how some lasting sense of it can be achieved. And because it is the 50th anniversary of May 13, 1969, we wanted to hear from you on the issue of unity. Where are we at the moment? Do you feel that we are united? And how can that be improved? Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back after this. It's the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin, and we are marking the 50th anniversary of May 13th by talking about national unity, and we want to hear from you. How are we doing, really? You know, what do you think? How do you think we're doing in terms of national unity? How do you think it can be improved, if at all? Call us 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. At the moment, we have Paul on the line. Paul, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hi, good evening, guys. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. How are you?
Okay, I'm good. I'd just like to share with you my personal memory of May the 13th. I was living in Penang at the time, and I learned a new word at 7 years old, and that word was curfew. So we had curfew. We couldn't go to school. We couldn't go out of the house. And then the next year, just we moved to KL when I was 8, and then we also could not go to school or get out of the house, and it was called flood. So, you know, when you're young, you learn new words in different ways. But coming back to the topic at hand, I suppose, unity, I believe we have a long, long way to go. I suppose because we have some new thinking and some new but old leadership. I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that things will improve on the unity front. In other words, getting people to be more united and more happy and proud to be Malaysian, having hopes there. But after a year of Pakatan Harapan in power, I think we still have a long way to go.
And Paul, I mean, do you have any suggestions or ideas on how you would like to see that increase in unity come about? I mean, is there anything that you'd like to see?
I guess, you know, I mean, when you look at the situation on the surface, everything looks looks okay. It's just when we have, you know, things like by-elections, you know, then people get up on their podiums and the stages and talk about things in a very, very polarized way. Perhaps we could, I mean, personally, having traveled overseas and locally as well, one of the things that I found in, for example, East Malaysia, especially Sabah, is that kind of people eat together, right? Even though they're from, you know, you have a kopitiam and everybody from every religion eats together. I think we kind of don't have that over here in the peninsula. And I believe when people are segregated when it comes to eating and things like that, it tends to increase or, how should I say, magnify that sort of segregation, right? So I don't know what can be done, but I suppose if people were to be like in Sabah and they eat in the same place, and then you get people from different religions and cultures perhaps mixing together, and that builds more, fosters more understanding and acceptance, tolerance, and gives you better unity, a real one, rather than, you know, something that's been talked about whenever there's a by-election.
Paul, thank you so much for calling and for sharing your thoughts. Let us know what you think about national unity. How are we doing? What do you think? Call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Balming frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin, and it's 6:36. As we've been saying, today is the 50th anniversary of May 13th. Earlier, we spoke to Dr. Farouk Musa of the Islamic Renaissance Front about the state of unity in Malaysia, really because that was the most immediate reaction to May 13th, right? It's been the thing that in many ways spurred on a number of policies aimed to create that sense of unity. And yet, here we are 50 years later, and we're still trying to struggle our way through to it, right? We're still trying to find that answer. And so as part of that conversation, we wanted to hear from you. What do you make of national unity at the moment?
So I think what our guest earlier, Dr. Farouk Musa said was that it's trying to, I guess, address the economy inequalities that exist, and hopefully through that we will achieve unity. And I think there is a lot to take away from that, because it's true, we do have a very large wealth gap in Malaysia, and that is something that we do need to firmly and strongly address.
So some messages here. Melvin saying May 13th has been a taboo subject for the past 5 decades. Dr. Kwa Koo Siong's book May Day should be made compulsory reading. And then Patrick says, unity can be improved with sports. Invest to bring up more sports talent and celebrity in the international arena. National pride will bring up unity among us. Datuk Lee Chong Wei is just a prime example of this. And this is matching up to this message that came through from Cynthia.
We are united when we cheer for Malaysia in sports events. I recall how high the spirit was in Mama Stalls during Olympic Games cheering for our badminton teams.
That seems to be all we can agree on, sports and food. That's the stuff that kind of brings everybody together, at least for a brief shining moment.
And then, of course, then the other parts of being a united nation, being together, that's something we need to address too. Sure, you know, sports and food, it does unite us in a lot of ways, but in other ways, I feel like there's a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's nice to hold on to the things that can make people happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also have Mark on the line. Mark, good evening. What are your thoughts?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, good. Thanks for having me.
No worries.
I just want to say very quick. Mm-hmm. We have to look at May 13 from the context of a 20-year period from 1945 right up to 69. May 13 was not the most bloody racial conflict that we experienced. In 1945, 46, right after the Japanese surrendered, 2,000 people died in inter-ethnic fighting. And the emotions that was engendered from that event caused several riots, three riots in Singapore, and culminating in the riots of 1969. What I want to say is that since 1969, we have not had such serious ethnic conflict, and it is May 13 that actually made us think, what should we do to prevent another of such incident happening? And it is the incident that, instead of dividing us, it actually brought us together.
Mark, thank you so much for calling and for sharing
that.
So I do think that there is definitely something there in terms of, there's a reason we're still talking about it today, right? Because it is a date that has stuck out in many people's minds. And as far as it goes in terms of forcing us to think and to think actually about how to formally try to create that unity, I think there's definitely a fair point there.
Yeah, and the point about it sometimes being a taboo subject, I just wonder if it's necessary for us to avoid talking about it, because for one, it is a very painful event, and people who live through it, the moment we talk about it, they get re-traumatized by the event. But then at the same time, I also believe that if we don't talk about something, we aren't able to heal from it and move forward from it. So even just discussing about what to do today, there were a lot of questions in my mind about how we should treat this story.
Azam says, are we united? Well, on the surface, we may be. You know, true enough, we're far away from a time where this unity will make us hurt each other. But when it comes to unity in its true sense, we are far away from it. How can we be when the government hasn't created a true Malaysian identity? And sadly, I feel the fault isn't just with them, but the people themselves. The answer is, you know, the answer lies in education. Having a single education system, to me, is essential in creating a true Malaysian identity, giving children the opportunity to interact and to understand one another. I feel the interaction during the 70s when I was born was so much better than what we have now. And perhaps who is to blame is just, you know, we ourselves, because we're too individualistic and we forget the importance of creating a true national identity.
And I think that there is some importance there in having a single education system. However, I just wonder if, let's say right now at the very moment, we already have a lot more national schools than we do have, say, vernacular or special stream schools, and the problem of disunity exists. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure if necessarily the single education system is going to solve that, or whether it's an easy answer.
Keep those messages coming. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we're going to be hearing some memories of people who lived through May 13th, 1969. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We have, of course, been talking about unity today in light of the fact that it's the 50th anniversary of May 13th. And now we're going to get some different perspectives from people who actually lived through the day and the events that took place immediately after. Hassan Mutalib, who directed Sang Kanchil and Silat Legenda, was 24 when it happened. He worked in Film Negara at the time and lived in Kampung Baru.
We were suddenly told by our boss to go home, because there were rumours of trouble. And when we arrived in Kampung Baru, there was actually nothing happening. But at 5 p.m., I went out of the house to go to Datuk Harun Idris' residence, which was in Princess Road, and to see what the fuss was all about. But the moment I came out to the main road, I saw a young Chinese on his motorbike speeding very fast along the road, hail road that goes right through Kampung Baru. Many young Malays were throwing all kinds of things at him, but he managed to escape. So I thought I better not go, otherwise, you know, I do not know what I will get into. That very evening, we heard there were clashes here and there, and the rumors were spreading fast. And then there was a curfew, and Tengku Abdul Rahman came on TV to say, you know, there were clashes and to stay indoors and so on. Of course, that night we were very fearful and we kept awake, and the street lights were off. Now, one or two days later, the curfew was still on and we didn't have anything to eat. So we had to raid the Chinese shop near the junction of Campbell Road and Hale Road. And we broke down the gate and we took whatever we can. And I remember, you know, taking skaya and eating skaya only. We had nothing else. A few days later, I think the curfew was lifted, and I walked around taking photographs of the burnt buildings. The terrace houses in front of our house were all burnt. So then I went to Kampung Pandan, to my Silat Master's house, and some Chinese shop houses had been burnt, and I could still see smoke. This is in one of my photographs.
Tan Sri Lilamta is the trustee of the Malaysia Unity Association. In 1969, he was the same age as Hassan, and at 24, he was the youngest elected state assemblyman in the country.
All I could remember was that it was a day where there was trouble, chaos and violence right in the heart of Kuala Lumpur. But at that time, I was not in Kampung Baru because when the curfew was imposed, I was actually in Petaling Jaya. And I had no means to travel because there was a curfew with the police, the patrol cars all over this federal highway, you know. And the whole place was this deserted, actually. You know, I was very, very concerned because at that time, I was already an elected state assemblyman for Bukit Nanas. And part of Bukit Nanas was affected, you know, by the riots, you see. So I was very keen. I wanted to get back to KL. But I could not because there was just a curfew. So I was stuck in my friend's home. I could not leave because I was advised not to leave for almost about these 2 to 3 weeks. But when the curfew was lifted, of course, the first thing I did was I went to visit my constituents to find out about them. And of course, there were very sad stories that I had to hear. And I was thrust into that kind of a political scene, you know, after the riots. It took quite a while for parliamentary democracy to be restored, you know. We had this, just the Mageran. The Mageran was actually some kind of an emergency, just a council that was set up, you know, to administer the country at a time when there was no parliamentary democracy.
Angel Fernandez, the co-founder of human rights group the Naganita, was a 20-something college student in Penang. For her, the events of May 13th marked the end of Tunku Abdul Rahman's leadership as the country's first prime minister.
I was a youth leader in Penang, and it was our first prime minister, Tunku Abdul Rahman, who met all of us as youth leaders. He would meet us every 3 months, and he used to teach us that as youths, we needed to respect one another, that we must have loyalty to our country, Malaysia, and that we must always work hard to have a fair and just Malaysia. And I remember vividly when May 13 happened, the first Prime Minister announced that he was stepping down. I remember we held hands with other people and we cried and cried because I believed that our first Prime Minister, Tunku Abdul Rahman, was the right person to build a fair and just Malaysia. And that was his dream. We lost a good man as a Prime Minister, our first Papa Malaysia. But that made me much stronger to come and say that, no, at all costs, I must protect my country, Malaysia. I must bring people together.
May 13 is remembered in several ways, as a lesson, a warning, a reminder. But should we remember it at all? Here's what Hassan thinks.
I don't think we should remember it anymore because it was the machinations of the politicians. So we should forget totally about it and create a new image. So one of our filmmakers, Chiu Keng Guan, who made the film called Ola Bola, he was very concerned about the situation. And that is why Ola Bola is actually a very subtle criticism and posing a question of why is it that at one time we were united, but today we are so segregated. And it is all due to the politicians who are crazy for power and they don't want the Chinese being seen as partners with the Malays. Now, for the young generation today who knew nothing about all of that, I don't think they have a trauma about this. It's only the older generation who had suffered through it. So the young people today should not be told about May 13 anymore. We should be creating something very new, and the media has got to be used 100% to show all races working together, just like Gerald Templer did in the 1950s, that we are one.
On the other hand, Agil feels that it's important that the stories actually continue to be told for the benefit of future generations.
I spent a lot of time with young people to help them to see on Malaysia, the future of Malaysia. Now, most of them do not know about May 13, 1969, the tragedy that should never happen. But we need to share our stories and not forget about it. We need to tell, especially the young people, the future Malaysians who are going to build this country, that there must never be a tragedy like May 13, that a lot of innocent lives were lost. We are good Malaysians. We need to love one another as we love ourselves. We owe the highest respect to one another. We need to learn we have one race, and that is the human race. For me, all types of slogans around us, but if each one of us don't practice it in our own homes, workplaces, in our communities, and as a nation, we will never ever have a beautiful, fair, non-discriminative and a just Malaysia. So it's something that we need to remember. I think we should all take a trip to the cemeteries that are in Sungai Buloh, in Gombak, and let's go together, say a prayer and remember all those innocent lives that were lost, families that suffered. And I think together as Malaysians, we can step forward and build a fair and just Malaysia.
For Tan Sri Lee Lam Tai, building a fair and just Malaysia means leaving behind the racial and religious rhetoric that permeates Malaysian politics.
As far as I'm concerned, May 13 was a major setback for democracy, interracial harmony and unity in the country. Now, what Malaysia needs most are ethnic bridge builders instead of ethnic heroes, in order to neutralize the politics of hatred, racial polarization, and religious exclusiveness, which seems to be on the rise. And in this regard, I believe that the adoption of the Rukun Negara principles and also the in-depth understanding of the federal constitution is the cornerstone for the formation of a united and moderate Malaysia. I know that building a country is not easy. It is a long and arduous process. So I think it is vital for Malaysia to continue to exist as a united and peaceful nation with political stability despite the existence of divergent political ideologies and views.
So ultimately then, how can we move forward from this black mark on our history? For Hassan, the answer lies in films and keeping politicians in check.
Whatever TV programs, whatever films that we should make, it should show a multiracial cast. For instance, film directors like Din Syed and Namron have been doing this because they believe that the real Malaysia is the Malaysia where we are all working together. We speak in all the various languages of the country. And when we meet in coffee shops or whatever, there is no discrimination between us. So we talk in all languages. Even the mama becomes a very good friend of us. And as you can see, the mama shops have all been upgraded to become bistros and whatever. So on the ground, the people are doing their part. Now it is the politicians that we should be kicking in the butt. So let us give Pakatan Harapan the full 5-year term and see what can happen.
That was Hassan Muttalib. You also heard from Angel Fernandez and Tan Sri Lee Lam Tai, who shared their personal accounts of May 13th, 1969, as well as their hopes for the future and unity of Malaysia. So we've also been asking you, where do you think, how do you think we're doing when it comes to national unity at the moment? What can we do to improve? And the messages have been coming through. For example, we have this from Kamran Nizam, who says, "We are so diverse that only respect and dignity can get us together. UN conventions are not made for countries like us. It's easy to forget that at 62 years, we're still too young to uphold true freedom and liberation. Our existing constitution is just nice. What we need is more understanding. Schools should be united. And what I'm saying is give more time and education to unity in order to grow properly."
And that's important, right? The fact that sometimes we forget that we are a very young nation and we do perhaps just need to give each other a bit more time and be patient with one another.
Casey Lau says, "This country has lost precious resources and time administering and managing our differences. Instead, we should be bankrolling the strength of our diversity instead." And there's definitely a very strong point in there. I think there is strength in diversity that we tend to ignore when we push tolerance as the thing to achieve above everything else, right? But at the same time, I do think that there are certain ground rules and groundwork that needs to be laid before we get to move on from that.
There are certain grievances that we also need to address, and that's coming out from the really loud voices we hear in the news, we hear in the media. But at the same time, we also have to remember with that point earlier, is that it's great to celebrate our differences and our diversity, and certainly I think a lot of the silent majority would agree with you.
Seifel says, "Malaysia was built on diversity. No matter how different we are, we must find similarities in order to be united, because the world sees us as unique due to our multiracial community." I wonder whether... Are we pushing that enough, I wonder?
The narrative that we are multiracial.
Yes, correct. Because all I get is confusion from Australians. What are you actually? What's going on? You know, and so I don't know if everybody knows exactly our cultural makeup, or not even knows exactly, but knows enough about.
We're trying our best, I think, to figure out what in the world we are exactly. We can't settle on the language, though maybe we should settle on the fact that we just have multiple languages that we speak. We don't have one culture that we necessarily share. But then again, we could just appreciate that we just have many that it kind of gets mixed in along the way.
We've been talking about unity today to mark the 50th anniversary of May 13th. Now we have to head to the 7 o'clock news. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:05 in the evening. And before we move on to a topic that's kind of been floating around a little bit, it seems to recur every couple of months or so, somebody brings up, what? Decentralization? What about decentralization? And then we talk about it again.
And that also ties in with the conversations we have about local elections, which I think some people really want. And I think generally it's just a good thing for the state of democracy in Malaysia.
Absolutely. So we'll be getting to that in a bit. First, some messages that came through on the subject of unity. Aslan says, you become a kinder and better human being when diversity is an important part of you and you can't live without other races. I know I cannot live without them.
You know, I remember this story that I think came from Denmark, where they had the first ever female Muslim politician. Her name was Özlem Çiçek. I'm not sure if I'm getting her name right. I'm probably not getting it right. So what she did as a Muslim politician is that she would used to be getting a lot of hate mail from people who were Muslim phobic or Islamophobes. So what she would do is she would go to the houses of these people and have a face-to-face conversation with them with some food that she brought over, just to understand, you know, why do you hate me so much? I just want to know what you misunderstand about me. So of course, sometimes she doesn't have like the most productive of conversations, but I mean, the lesson that we want to take away from that is that maybe if we had more face-to-face conversations and honest conversations with each other, we could achieve more unity.
On that note, actually, we received a message here saying, "I was asked by a friend, a non-Malaysian, apakah identity orang Malaysia? Indonesians can speak the Indonesian language, Thais can speak Thai, and honestly, I couldn't answer. Yes, we unite in sports and food, but we have to agree we're not united. But I love my Chinese, you know, former co-workers. We keep in touch until now." And I wanted to read that because I think that there's something in there that a lot of people would relate to, which is that when you think of other people as like a monolithic big group, it feels much easier to be a bit dismissive or sometimes to be a bit rude or to misunderstand intentions or practices, things like that. But most people on a ground level will talk to you about the daily Malaysians that they encounter, will have... you know, they will eat food prepared by people of a different race. They will go to a doctor who is of a different race to them. They're just all these daily interactions that we have with people who are diverse in culture. But we tend to forget that when we suddenly think of people as the Chinese or the whatever race. You know, it just happens that way.
And with this message, it's again, very important to think about Malaysia as not just one race or one culture or one language. We are so much more than that. And when we try to push that to tourists in our messages, perhaps we can take something away from there too.
And we have a message here from Kim that sounds really quite wise. I think May 13 is an event to be remembered, but the way it's to be remembered and how it's supposed to be told to the next generation is crucial. On and on, this event is brought up in political speeches, but in a way to remind us how tolerance is needed and there are boundaries not to be crossed or else history will repeat. The moral of the story is focused more on instilling fear in the younger generation, and this sense of fear is why we're segregated these days. We're afraid of interaction, as interaction means there will be communication involved. Who knows what we might say or do that might trigger another, you know, more racial tension. The result of May 13 is that we lived peacefully and harmoniously, but in our own bubbles, a layer of protection that would avoid conflicts but also segregated us. May 13 should have been told differently. It shouldn't be instilling fear in us.
And that came across from the people we spoke to earlier. And it was more to serve as what lesson can we learn from this? And it shouldn't be fear, but it should be the fact that, you know, we're a lot stronger with what unites us than what divides us.
Yes. Keep those messages coming. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. We are talking today about national unity in light of it being the 50th anniversary of May 13, 1969. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.